Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/ Twitter, Instagram. We are also coming to you later on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, not Stitchers, Android, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night?
Do you want to do this, Pete? You seem very upset right now.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Oh my God. Calm down. Let me set this up. Once a month, we pay tribute to our amazing Patreon supporters who love it when Pete just jumps the gun.
Thank you,
wrecks the show as much as possible. They love it. They love the anarchy. They're all anarchists, which is why they donate.
Cats and dogs living together.
The Pete are anarchists by nature. They're a strange species, but they're out there living that wildlife.
So we say thank you by saying the names of anybody who pledges $5 and above. I will say, and I'll loop back around to this at the end, but you can start at $2 a month or $1 a month if you really want to. Lots of bonuses we'll talk about in a moment, but let's give these kind folks a shout out right now, starting with Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam Bass.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Carrie Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sadoway.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Enrique Jubes.
Gerard de Villiers.
Ian Rainey.
Ian Thomas.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Godley.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Long John Henderson.
Long Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wright.
Julian Lobato.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kaminsky.
Liwana Davis.
Lucas Sink.
Maddie.
Mad Max Bliskin.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Gelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullies.
Omnia Solart.
Orin Dix.
Olis Larson.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Roxanne Tyler.
Shouts to my mom. Hear it. She listens to the episode I'm not in sometimes.
Wow. Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamela Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Badge.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics. What if we just kept saying names? When would we ever notice that?
Oh, man. Cooler McPrinter. Couchman. Tissue Box.
Dr. McGillicuddy.
Seriously, thank you to everybody who supports. If you are interested in supporting us, As I said, $2 a month, you get a ton of great bonuses. You get access to our very active, very fun Patreon Slack. Going all day, chatting comics and movies and TV shows and a lot of scary politics stuff right now, but you could stay out of that room if you want to. And
you're not selling.
I know. It's terrible. I'm terrified all the time of this Patreon. Also, you can get access to our back catalog of all of our podcasts stretching all the way back to 2011, all the way through 2023. That's thousands of podcasts, many that are not online anymore.
No, that's so, just the right amount of opinions. If you want opinions, exactly. We got them.
All tell you what. $2, you can check our opinions from 16 years ago.
We should open an antique opinion store.
Don't we have amazing guests that are on our way?
We do have amazing guests. And just to wrap up this section, want to say for real, seriously, we could not keep the show going without our Patreon supporters.
Thank
whatever
you,
the
Patreon
level.
Supporters.
Thank you so much. The show is very expensive to put together, and the website and everything, and you guys help make it happen. So thank you.
We get
really
new wardrobe every week, and it's
yeah, that's what's so expensive about it. Also, all of my cheeseburgers.
Yeah, all your toys back there, they cost us a lot of money that you put together.
You can't talk shit about his toys.
This was an empty lot.
Framed artwork behind you.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, listen, I would like to frame our next two guests. In a
for
picture,
murder.
To be clear,
for
not
murder.
For
murder.
Nope.
Later in the show, we're going to have David Popose. It's going to be here. But why don't we bring in our first guest? He is the creator of Under Kingdom, as well as the upcoming Rick and Morty Finals Week Brawl Her from Oni Press. Ladies and gentlemen, Christoph Bogarch. Did I get it close?
Yeah, you got it right. You got it totally right.
Oh God, nice. Had it. I don't. I think I played it pretty cool. I don't think anybody noticed.
No. You literally said the words "oh no" before you said it. So not ideal.
Yeah, probably not. Christoph, thank you so much for coming on the show. Excited to chat about all of this stuff. Why don't we first talk about Rick and Morty, because this is coming out tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah.
From Oni's Pest. This is part of a finals week event. Now, I probably should have looked into this, but my impression from reading this is almost like an exquisite corpse-style miniseries where one person tells a story and then kind of kicks it to the next creative team. Is that correct, or how did this come together?
Yeah, kind of. So I think a good way of describing it is kind of halfway between an event, like miniseries, and then a one-shot. So each issue is like a one-shot, a self-contained story, but they're all kind of connected by this story about that it's Morty's final week of exams. And so every issue correlates to him. He's meant to be studying for one of these exams, and then obviously things go awry and he goes off on a crazy adventure. You can read them together, or you can read, if there's just a particular one or a couple that you like, you can grab them as well. Yeah, so it's halfway between a miniseries and a one-shot.
Cool. What was the coordination like behind the scenes then? Were you able to sort of like check yourself so you weren't repeating jokes, or you were able to make callbacks to the other issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think just because of the timing of the project, we were pretty kind of isolated in our own bubbles. I mean, so our amazing editor, Bess Polares, was like the connective tissue. So it was really, she kind of coordinated with everyone and made sure, that we weren't doubling up on jokes or ideas or anything like that.
Cool. That's awesome. I feel like the Rick and Morty comic universe has such a breadth. I mean, the show has so many like corners and different like wild places to explore. How did you sort of land on this area? Obviously, the event helped put some guardrails in there.
Totally. So Oni came to me with kind of a rough idea of what they wanted from this issue. So they knew that they wanted it to be set against Morty studying for his finals exam. And that they wanted it to be like them getting sucked into like a side-scrolling video game. So that was kind of the prompt, and then everything else I was kind of able to add myself. And like you said, the great thing about Rick and Morty is just how eclectic the world is. So yeah. I kind of basically was able to figure out what I like about the show, what attracts me to it, and what I think I could do well, and kind of put that in the comic, and sort of curate my little corner of the Rick and Morty universe that I think I could really speak to well.
One of the things that I think is super important is when you know something from something else and then you get kind of like a comic, you wonder, are the voices, is it going to really feel like the Rick and Morty I know? So congratulations, you killed it in that aspect. I really love the Jerry moment that you have in this issue of Not Today, Satan. Congratulations, just nailed that. That was just fun.
I relate to Jerry a lot. I put a lot of like there's a reference to TLC's Seeking Sister Wives, which I am obsessed with. I was so happy that they let me put that reference in there. So yeah, I relate like a little bit too much to Jerry.
What came through? It was great.
I mean, on the same note, what was it like, without getting too much into spoilers, what was it like doing a Rick and Morty story where Rick and Morty are essentially like back burner here?
Yeah.
It's very much Summer and Beth are in the front, they're center, they're the one with the emotional arc.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, for me, what makes Rick and Morty really like quite easy to write is all the characters are really petty. There's nothing, you know, like... It's really easy to create obstacles for characters that care about, you know, that like are really petty. So like I'm putting Rick in the back burner was a lot of fun because obviously he's not going to like that. And with Summer and Beth, I mean, I feel like the show's given us so much with them and it was kind of nice to put them front and center. But again, like they're petty and insecure in their own ways. It makes them very easy to write.
Nice.
Let's talk about your other book, though. This came out, I want to say, a year ago?
A
year ago, called Under Kingdom. And this is great. This is a wild fantasy book. It's about 80-ish pages long. This is such a wonky question, but I'm so curious because you generally expect this sort of thing to be like, okay, we have... a 22-page issue or a 24-page issue, or we have a graphic novel that is plus 100 pages long. Why 80-ish pages? How did you end up with that?
Totally. I mean, yeah, I wish I could be like, you know, some grand creative reason, but I think a lot of it was just timing and we kind of felt that in terms of the time and the budget we had for the project, 88 pages was going to work best. So I think after we've made it, I think if we do, you know, when we do more Under Kingdom, it's always going to be 88 pages. We've kind of learned the format and kind of, I really loved the limit. By the end of it, I really loved that there were limited pages. It kind of forced me to be really economical. And because, you know, because it's a middle grade and / YA book, I mean, kids can kind of just keep up in a way that I think adults don't as much. So I think... now for me, the 88 pages is a creative decision, but at the time it was very much a logistical one.
Could you talk a little
bit? Oh,
go ahead, Justin.
No, I was just, maybe we're asking the same question. I love the artist on three as well. Oh, that's risky, given our Wi-Fi. Yeah.
You already asked the question. It was actually the same question.
I knew it. How did you connect with Marie on the art? Because I think the art is so great in this. It's so like unique and pops in such a great way.
Marie's incredible. It's wild to me that they're not bigger, that they haven't kind of blown up, because they're incredible and they have such a rabid, enthusiastic fan base. So I met Marie at Emerald City in 2018. So as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not American. I live in Sydney, Australia.
Oh, I thought you were having some fun. I was just
really committing to a bit. Emerald City 2018 was like the first... American convention I went to, and I met Marie. I'd been a big fan of their art online, and I actually kind of, at the time, I was just like, oh, they're great, they're this huge, amazing, accomplished artist, you know. I was really in awe of them, and then we met. They were so lovely. We started talking online afterwards, and then maybe, you know, 6 months after talking online, they said, hey, a publisher wants me to do like a middle grade or YA graphic novel. I don't have any ideas. Do you have any? And I kind of shot the idea for Under Kingdom through, and we both really vibed on it.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
This is such a, you know, like fun, creative story. You know, the old Under Kingdom, we've all heard this before, you know what I mean? Like, we've all been pulled out of school to be like, listen, you gotta run the Under Kingdom. You're like, oh, okay, typical Tuesday. Where did this come from? This is really such a fun, creative idea.
Totally. It's two places, yeah. So the first is the old video game Dungeon Keeper, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but it's like a... But it's like a dungeon management sim where you have this, like, you're like an evil overlord and you like have a dungeon that you look after. And also the other kind of places, obviously the Dungeons and Dragons, like the dungeon crawl. So it was kind of the idea of like, I just felt like there'd never really been any kind of like media that treated the dungeon as like a living, working ecosystem and kind of world. So that was the idea behind it, is like, how would this world actually work? How is it structured? How is it organized? And that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from.
Did you have to have the whole dungeon sketched out for you? Like, how did you plan it out?
Great question. No, Marie and I are pretty, I would say, loose and improvisational with the way we do things. So obviously we have like a bigger structure and we discuss, all right, like, what kind of monsters are the way they're going to look and behave. But a lot of the time, particularly with this first book, is Marie would just send me a sketch of a monster and be like, this is this monster, this is their name, you do the rest. So like Lemon, the dragon, they literally just sent me a photo and was like, this is Lemon, he's got wings on his butt. And I'm like, all right, he's in the story now. So that's a lot of it. It's awesome. It's just kind of very organic. You know, so we have like a plan for the dungeon, but I think a lot of it is just us kind of wanting it to expand organically as we kind of figure out what we want to do and jam on it.
Like an actual dungeon. When you're building a dungeon, you want to sort of like start with a cave and then build out from there. Add your beasts, your prisoners, your pirates.
Do the beasts go last, or do you like place the beasts and then build the dungeon around them? How does that
work? Great question, Alex. Really great question.
A lot of people at home build their own dungeons, so that's a big part of our family.
We actually started as a dungeon building podcast and then moved into
We've gotten away from our core.
We have. But thank you for bringing us back to it. We appreciate you bringing us to the core of the dungeon. Now, you said before.
So proud of yourself.
Yeah, that got weird. That got real weird.
For something I don't know quite what you mean.
Yeah, I don't know if you really landed that shit.
Dungeon as a center. Like,
no, we got it. We got it. It's not as impressive as you think.
If you were talking about like an apple and you said core, then I'd be like, oh, sick. Alex really put that together. Dungeons all have cores.
I don't know. We can debate this later when we get back to, we get rid of the guests. We never have them again and just start talking about dungeons. Christoph, though, you touched on this earlier. It's very much open for a sequel at the end here. Is that something that you're already working on, planning, or is that just kind of
perfect? Yeah. So that's something where Marie and I are kind of in the process of working with our wonderful editor, Connor, to kind of put together a proposal for the second one. So that's, I think in progress is a good way of describing that. But we always wanted to do more. And, you know, with both Marie and I really, really love the series, and they're going to do everything we can to make sure there's more.
Yeah, awesome. Great, because I want more of that axe. You know what I mean? Like, that's just some great stuff there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, that I was like, occasionally you come up with an idea that, like, you're like, oh, that's fun. And the talking axe that refuses to talk, I was like, that's a fun idea. Right?
That's hilarious. Yeah. That's just fun stuff.
I took a day off early when I came up with that one. I was very, very happy with it.
Before we let you go, those are two great projects, but what else do you have? What else do you want to plug, if anything?
And it is enough. Don't think it isn't.
You're doing good work.
Yeah,
so congrats. Basically those two projects. So Rick and Morty is out tomorrow. Yeah, so Wednesday in the US, Thursday here in Australia. And then I also wanted to say that currently Marie and I are pushing to try and get Under Kingdom of Ringo. So the Ringo Award nominations are open. So if you could nominate Under Kingdom for Best Kids Graphic Novel.
Yes, do it.
Or comic, or Best Original Graphic Novel. We would so appreciate that.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. A good plug.
Yeah.
I have a question. I didn't know that new comics were released Thursday in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
But they're in the future.
Yeah. So it's Wednesday morning here now.
Yeah, what's Wednesday like?
It is very, it's very Wednesday, I guess.
Okay.
Expect a very Wednesday.
I appreciate it. Got a little hope going.
Man, this is blowing my mind. This is a huge exclusive, I think, that comics come out Thursday in Australia. So I appreciate you sharing with us. Crystal.
Exclusive. A very well-known fact. Yeah.
I don't know how time zones work, but I do know that your comics are great. Christoph, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been a dream. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Great work. Thanks for coming out.
Good night or good morning or whatever it is.
And good luck.
The future.
Alex, he's in the future.
So just again, I know he plugged that stuff, but you can check out Under Kingdom from Dark Horse. That's available everywhere. And as mentioned, if you'd like to nominate it for Ringo, I believe, Justin, you dropped the link.
I dropped the website in there.
Oh, JT says, come on, man. Yeah,
follow that link. Hit that.
For anybody listening, ringoawards.com, like Ringo Starr, but it's actually short for Mike Warango, I believe. And the other one is Rick and Morty Finals Week Brawl Her, which is out from Oni Press tomorrow.
That's a great ish.
April 17th or Thursday, I guess. Pretty weird.
Really? Eye roll in your sentence,
Jesus,
there, Alex.
What are you? Are you against Australia? What's your stance on that?
I love it.
Whatever.
I would love to go there someday. I would love to go there someday, but I could get my comics here in America first.
Because, smart. You can race there. Alex, this is a great business for you. You can buy comics in America, fly as fast as you can to Australia, and release them early.
Oh, man. This is great.
Yeah.
Except for the logistics of the time zone, which will inevitably ruin you.
Hey, we'll see what happens. Anything's possible with the magic of comics.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And nobody knows that better than our next guest, who has a big book coming out very soon from Dynamite called Space Ghost. You may have heard of it. Ladies and gentlemen, David Popose. David, welcome.
Hey, welcome back.
Hey.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh man.
And now you're in a regular time zone, right?
Yes. Well, you know, the funny thing, it's funny. I didn't know that comics came out on Thursdays in Australia. I just assumed that they read them counterclockwise. So this is actually good for me to learn as well. We're all learning things today.
Yes.
But no, thank you so much for having me, fellas.
Oh my gosh. Excited to have you here. Excited to talk about this book. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, just to lay down the context. So this is not Space Ghost Coast to Coast. This is the original Hanna-Barbera Space Ghost. This is part of Warner Brothers Discovery's new deal with Dynamite, where they have a line of comics. Thundercats has been a blockbuster book out of the gate. Yeah. Space Ghost hasn't been too shabby either. It's sold over 70,000 something.
Woo! Over 67,000 already.
Damn!
Counting.
So. That's awesome. I mean, my first question, just because I think most people know Space Ghost from Coast to Coast in the modern era.
Right.
I assume it wasn't totally your choice, but why go back to the older iteration of the character, the more classic iteration?
It's a great question. And I think for me, it really kind of stems both, you know, what was my introduction to Space Ghost? And I think like a lot of people in my generation, I only knew of him in Coast to Coast growing up.
Yeah, as a talk show host.
It wasn't until my first internship in the industry, I was interning at DC, that I started learning about some of the, you know, the historical figures in the business, like Alex Toth, and realizing that, Space Ghost had superheroic roots. And I think between learning about that and reading Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti's miniseries that they did in 2006, which is sort of like a Batman Begins style origin story for Space Ghost, I realized like this is a character that has all the ingredients of an A-lister. You know, he's a character that's like equal parts Batman and Flash Gordon. He's got this amazing array of superpowers. He's got his power bands that give him the power over fire and ice and laser beams and force fields. And he's got his Invisobelt that lets him turn invisible. And he's got his Phantom Cruiser spaceship. And he's got his base on Ghost Planet. He's got this trio of really cool sidekicks, Jan, Jace, and their pet monkey Blip. And then he's got just this incredibly stacked bench of villains, like a rogues gallery that's every bit as iconic as Batman and Spider-Man and The Flash. And so for me, it was one of those things that like superheroes are obviously a very well-mined genre in the comic book business. But Space Ghost feels like unexplored territory. There's so many different facets of the character that have never really been explored in the comics medium, but even really in like animation. Those original Hanna-Barbera cartoons were about 5 minutes a pop. You know, yeah. About enough time to introduce these characters, let them run wild based on pure vibes, and with those designs.
That's a great way of saying it. Sorry to interrupt you real quick. I did watch the Space Ghost the Space Ghost cartoons were on the USA Cartoon Express. Shouts.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Which I watched a ton of. And yes, I remember being like, I don't know anything about this guy and his friends. He seems cool. But
yeah.
Are you getting to like build out a lot of stuff?
Yes. That's great. That's really our mission. For a book like this, is that you have all the ingredients of just the greatest superhero in the galaxy, and no one's really been able to have the time or the runway to dig into it. And so for me, it felt like unexplored territory. It just felt like characters that were like just dying for exploration. And the fact that Dynamite and Warner Brothers came to me and said, "Do you want to be the guy that does this?" I think it's a very rare place to be in the comics business, where so often you're kind of iterating on characters that have been iterated upon for decades. This is a character who, and this is where I'm really grateful for Coast to Coast. The bones of that character were really encased in amber for a very long time. Everybody knows of Space Ghost because of Coast to Coast, but those superhero bones are still good. And I get to kind of be one of the archaeologists like excavating that. It was just like too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Now, obviously, like we talked about, it's doing fine. It's selling well, probably going to sell even more when it gets to shops. Yeah. But when those numbers started coming in for Thundercats, where it's like blowing everything out of the water, were you sweating that at all? What was your feeling?
Sure. Well, you know, a little bit. Just because, you know, Declan Shalvey and Drew Moss are setting such a high bar for the rest of us. The thing that I think really kind of made me feel better about everything, well, first off, Warner Brothers and Dynamite have been such great partners in all of this. When they approached me for the book, they said, let's start with a year. Let's like develop a year's worth.
Great.
And you know, I've never gotten a runway like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. You
know, that's awesome. I think
it's rare to get that kind of runway in today's market. And I think on top of that, they've been so enthusiastic by just the places we've been taking this book. Like I said, you know, there's no backstory or continuity to any of the original episodes. It's very much you're in for 5 minutes and you're out. And so for me, I've been really blown away by how much latitude Dynamite and Warner Brothers have given us, where they're like, oh, you have an angle that you think is like really dynamic and really character driven. Yeah, run with that. That sounds exciting. Like I'm in the middle of writing issue 5 right now. Ooh. And I can count on one hand the number of notes I've gotten so far.
Oh, wow.
They're also like, yeah, we don't know about this either. So,
you know, it's just like I say, you know, I keep saying unexplored territory. And I think that's like it really fits for Space Ghost. But the great thing about it is just like Alex Toth, again, was throwing fastball after fastball with this series. And you see it in every single design. You know, Space Ghost as a character, even though it very much was coming in the heels of Adam West's Batman when it came out, there's still something unique about him. Just like you see the cool, like that stark white jumpsuit. You see like the wavy yellow cape. You're like, oh, it's not just an iteration of Batman. Like there's something to it. And then you see all the villains. You know, you see somebody like Zorak, and you're like, oh, okay. I even though they don't have a history for him, I get kind of a sense of who that guy is just by looking at him.
Now, let me ask you though. Yeah. Even though like moving away from the hard comedy take of Coast to Coast, the cartoons were still goofy as hell. Like they were like the Jan and Jace of it. Now, are you going to edge into that tone where we're in there is a little bit of camp there? Like, I don't know. I would have a hard time finding the road between all of these styles.
Sure. Well, so it's a great question. And for me, I see every iteration of Space Ghost being very much a product of its time. So you see that original iteration of Space Ghost in 1966. It's coming right in the heels of Adam West's Batman. And so, like you said, the Silver Age camp is like on display. And then you have the 1981 revival of Space Ghost in Space Stars. And that's coming out. That's a contemporary of Super Friends and Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And you kind of see that DNA in there. And then you've got Coast to Coast, which I think is very emblematic of like the irony of the MTV generation. And then you see Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti, for example, where like that is coming right in the zeitgeist of like Batman Begins. It's like it came out just a little bit before, I believe, but you can see kind of like the parallel thinking behind it. So for me, I always saw it as Space Ghost is very much a product of his time whenever he comes back. And so for me, that was, I think, mission critical was how do we kind of take all those cool component parts of Space Ghost and bring it into the year 2024? How do we tell that with like modern storytelling sensibilities? But I think that the thing that was equally important for me, and I can understand why people might think that given some of the other work I've done, I'm not leaning into this as like, oh, this is going to be the grim and gritty Space Ghost. You know, I'm not doing Robert Pattinson's The Space Ghost. for me, it was more about how do we take something like somewhere tonally between like Batman, the animated series, and Batman, The Long Halloween, you know, something that we get all the cool drama and action and tension and spectacle of a cool superhero book. But then we have this really nice contrast that is getting back to what you were talking about, which is the warmth and the humor of it all. And I think that is Jan and Jason Blip. You know, that was the first thing that I thought about when I was approaching this book, is there have been other iterations on Space Ghost that don't have Jan and Jason Blip. And to me, that feels like making a sundae without a cherry on top. You know, they, like nice. It's a core, it's what makes Space Ghost who he is. Mm-hmm. And so, whereas like original other comic series have had a Space Ghost origin story, for me, it's more about like, let's see who Space Ghost is through the eyes of these kids. You know, having them be the POV characters in the way that like Kitty Pryde was for the X-Men two generations ago. And so it's not a Space Ghost year one, but it might be like a Jan and Jace and Blip year one, so to speak. But I think that's what I think gives our series its unique tone, is that like we're able to have like our cake and eat it too, where we're able to have these cool superhero moments. But at the same time, like it's the emotional arc through the whole thing is Space Ghost's ongoing evolving dynamic between Jan and Jason Blip, where he's like the ultimate single dad in space, and how he's in a little over his head. And how do these kids go from being these orphaned wards to becoming his sidekicks, to becoming trusted partners, to becoming this like found family in their own right. So, it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, let me start by just saying you killed this, man. This issue is un-fucking believable. I had a blast reading this. So
thank you.
Congrats. When you get a project like this, and is it almost like a little scary because there isn't this kind of like, I'm going to do this next version of Space Ghost. There isn't this kind of like clear timeline. There's some stuff that people maybe aren't aware of. And then there's the stuff we know where he's a talk show host, which is weird. what's the first thing you tackle? Are you like, oh shit, I got to go read the first stuff of Space Ghost? Like, how do you, what's your first move?
I watched every episode of the original run. Watched every episode of the Space Stars revival. I read every comic I could get my hands on. I think I spent 2 or 3 weeks. That's just all I did.
Wow. I watched every episode of the Brack Show, but skipped.
I wasn't able to go that into that far afield of it. But I had to figure out like who this guy is, you know, and just get a sense of like what are the rhythms of like a Space Ghost episode, and like how do his powers work? That was like one of the biggest things that I had to wrap my head around, because you see those original episodes and he's just like, he's a Swiss Army knife. He's got all sorts of powers. It's almost, everybody calls him Space Batman, but he's got just as much in common with Superman in that regard. Because he's got that wide array of powers. So I watched every episode and I took detailed notes on every single episode, like just beat by beat by beat by beat. I think it's like a 40-page document I have in Google Docs. Just all my notes on Space Ghost. And once I did that and I kind of got a sense of like, okay, who are like the core characters here? I get a sense of who Space Ghost is and Jan and Jason Blip. But then it was also, okay, how do I kind of, what are my landmarks here? And that's the villains. And that's so cool, is that like, in that regard, Space Ghost does have, I think, like a structure that seems very natural that you can follow, because he's got the Council of Doom. That's sort of his like biggest, baddest bad guys. And so knowing that like that seems like an organic thing to build up to in any kind of Space Ghost series that hasn't really been built up in comic form beyond the Gold Key one shot that Mark Evanier and Steve Rude did in like 1987. Being able to build to that, you're like, okay, that's six villains that I know that I can build up to. And then figuring out, are there any other villains that I like that I kind of want to sprinkle along the way? Once I kind of figured that out and I wrap my head around like how Space Ghost works as a character, it really kind of flowed together really nicely. I had been really drilled into at Marvel the importance of done in one stories. And you can see it in my Punisher miniseries where, like, even though there's like an overarching like meta arc to it, every issue is kind of standalone. And so you see it in books like Ryan North's Fantastic Four, or you see it in Steve Orlando's work on Scarlet Witch, and Jed McKay really kind of pioneered it in a big way over in Moon Knight. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, if I'm going to be planning 13 issues of this book, let's do it a lot of done in ones. Let's cover mm-hmm. as much ground as we can by kind of racking up all these different adventures with Space Ghost. So once I kind of paced it all out, it was just kind of figuring out, you know, the villains are kind of, I think, a great way to kind of orient yourself issue to issue, where you figure out Brack and Sisto are going to be very different than the Widow, who's going to be very different than Zorak, who's going to be very different than Metallus.
That's so exciting.
Sorry to interrupt. We have question / clarification here from Twitch. Eric MCI says, does Space Ghost have powers? I thought all of his abilities were tech-based.
They are all tech-based. Yes. And that was something that like really like, you almost see like a little shared DNA with Iron Man in that regard, where like he's got all these cool abilities, you know, like it is a form of flight. It is a form of super strength. It is a form of invulnerability. And then the various blasters and force fields and invisibility, but it's all tech driven. And so what happens, like, you know, what happens down the line when maybe his tech is not available to him or his tech is not functioning as it should be. That's what kind of helped me wrap my head around Space Ghost, is that like, when you take everything away, when you take all the powers away, this is just a guy who's very, very determined. And I think the big difference between him and somebody like, I don't know, Moon Knight or Punisher, he's somebody who's very, very driven. But as you're going to see over the course of this series, he's also somebody who loves his kids. And I think that's, the thing that really stands apart for me is that before you have like Superman having kids, before you had Damian Wayne as like the true son of Batman, Space Ghost, like, you know, had like a whole family of sidekicks running around. Mm-hmm. And I think that sets him apart from somebody like Batman, where it's Batman and Robin, you know? And so it's organic when Batman goes out solo. But when you have three sidekicks, that's a pattern. That's like a very pointed message to me. And so I feel like not having those sidekicks, it's not Space Ghost anymore.
And he adopted Blip in your story, right? As a
Blip is Jan and Jace's pet from Space Colony Omicron. And so they're kind of a package set when Space Ghost meets all of them. And there's a very fun bit in issue two. Space Ghost is not thrilled to not only have these two kids in his base, but like he had to bring the monkey with him too. And you guys have read the first issue, so I won't spoil anything. But people who read issue one will know Blip is kind of the linchpin of our entire series. He's very important.
Just like the monkey from that Ross had on Friends. That's I'm sure a huge inspiration.
Yeah, exactly. A perfectly equal amount of influence.
I did want to more seriously ask you about the art, because I know you were saying that like it's not grim and gritty, but at the same time, for anybody watching live, I wanted to bring up this panel because for me, this was the point of the book where I was like, oh, this is cool. This is very cool. Where he comes out of the shadows and they're like, what are you? And he says, a ghost. The way that Jonathan Lau draws this is just amazing. Mostly in shadow, just the cape flowing, the smoke and everything. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Well laid out page. What's it like working with him? What's the back and forth like?
Jonathan is just a tremendous artist. I can't say enough good things about him. You know what? The thing I will say most about Jonathan is that every issue looks better than the one before it. I just did our lettering pass in issue three, and I was kind of marveling at just the leap that he's taken just from issue one to issue three. So it's really he's a wonderful artist.
Issue one is bananas good. I mean, I can't even imagine the improvement. Wait till issue three. It's so good.
They're all bananas good because they focus on a space monkey. Let's move on.
Oh my God! Look at the close up of the eyes and then the big shot afterwards. I mean, this is brilliant stuff.
There's a sequence in issue two that might be the most beautiful thing in comics that I've ever been a part of.
Wow.
All Jonathan and Andrew.
All right. Well, you got to come back on just to talk about that then, because I want to talk about that.
Sorry, just before I forget and then ask your question, Justin, I forgot to do this earlier. So every week on the show, Brett Macris, AKA Stray Bullet, AKA Stray Bully, is an actual chef down in New Orleans. Either creates or curates a cocktail for the show. And this week, he did one based on Space Ghost, because you were coming on. He did Space Ghost Toast to Toast, which is gin, Campari, limoncello, tonic, lemon wedge, and a basil leaf. Sounds great. I did not make it.
I'm going to have to try that.
It's good.
All right.
Yeah, all right. I will send it your way. There you go. I know we're avoiding the Space Ghost.
That's amazing. Thank you so much.
But at the same time, there you go. Anyway, over to Justin for his more serious question.
Well, I had a larger question. It's sort of like, David, I feel like in the, say, 5 years we've known you, you've gone from like your book that you sort of your first major book to doing all this work for Marvel. Now you're doing the Space Ghost. Can you talk about just that progression? I feel like that's sort of a dream progression for a lot of people who want
to. You're a huge deal now, man.
Oh, well, and just like it feels like a compressed timeline to go from, you know, bringing your own book to market all the way up to working on a major licensed property like this. So can you just talk about that
experience? I mean, a lot of it is being at the right place at the right time, and I would like to think that it's also just like I think I'm a pretty solid writer, but like I push my books really, really, really hard because I know that my artists are too busy to do it. I feel like that's sort of my responsibility to sort of be the face of the book. I've caught a lot of lucky breaks though. I mean, it's the fact that like my first book, Spencer and Locke, which actually we just hit our 7-year anniversary
last
week for that book. So
great book.
Everything's feeling very full circle for me right now. You know, being able to push that book. And for so many people in the press and the retailer community, really kind of championing that book, and then being able to leverage that, you know, into something like Scout's Honor over at Aftershock, and that book kind of showing the editors at Marvel that like I can hit a deadline and I'm not a crazy person, and I think, you know, it's overwhelming in all the best of ways. You know, I think for me, it's always I want to make sure I'm not getting it too big for my britches. I don't want to ever get in head over my skis. And so, you know, I think for me, the big learning curve has just been, you know, making sure you juggle all of it. And, you know, sometimes that makes for harder decisions. Sometimes there are projects that you kind of know aren't the right fit. And so you step away from those. And that's something I'm still learning. You know,
I would think that'd be very hard when you're first sort of breaking it.
Yeah.
Saying no first, not easy.
Yeah. Or even just, I've been fighting a bug for like the last week, and I saw my deadlines were starting to creep up. And so like I had to make a hard call where I was like, I know I was going to do C2E2. I, you know, the deadline has to come first. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that it's like you recognize how privileged you are. And I just kind of get up every day and I'm like, okay, how do I be worthy of it? And there are so many things that I would love to do better on my end. You know, I wish I was faster. I wish I was, you know, there are things in my own writing that as after it comes out, I'm like, I should have done this differently, or there's a way I could have made this cleaner. You know, and I'm sure a lot of other writers are like that as well. I think it's every day you're just trying to refine the process as best you can, and you hope you're going in the right direction. But yeah, I think every day it's just about being grateful for what you're getting, and nobody's more grateful than me. I've tried all sorts of office jobs that were not a great fit, and this feels like the job that I might actually be like kind of good at. So that's
nice, convenient.
But, yeah, I just feel like the luckiest guy in the universe, honestly.
Ah, that's awesome. And you are, this is something I wanted to bring up, very supportive. Like we touched on before, you helped create Joe Garrison, the new Punisher. You wrote a great series there. Earlier today, they announced that Joe Garrison is going to be guest starring the second appearance ever of the character in Daredevil, Woman Without Fear, which is by Erica Schultz.
Oh, yeah,
you were super supportive of that. And I mean, not
so excited.
To be like, fuck you, Erica Schultz.
No, not in the least. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, when I was asked to do Joe's origin, we knew it was going to be kind of a short time frame. We knew it was going to be 4 issues going in. And if anything, it was a huge challenge just when I was pitching it of like, oh, how do I tell like a story that like gets him from point A to point B and only do it in 4 issues? It was one of those things that I knew things. There were a lot of things like just kind of up in the air post X-Men. Because my editor on Punisher, Tom Brevoort, you know, he took over X-Men. And so there were a lot of books kind of going in various different offices. And so as I was talking with Devin Lewis, who is the new editor on Punisher, we were talking about like stuff we could work on together. And he mentioned, oh, by the way, your guy, Joe, he's going to be showing up in Erica's new series. And I was so excited when he told me that. Because I think
it's got to be so gratifying to see the
character.
Well,
it's not only
create.
That, but it's just I looked at characters like Robbie Reyes' Ghost Rider, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had a couple miniseries with Felipe Smith and Trad Moore, but it wasn't until Jason Aaron took that character and put him in the Avengers that suddenly, like that character that you're like, I don't know what's going to happen to him. Suddenly, that's where he gets a whole bunch of traction. And I realized very quickly that's the way you make a legacy like Joe actually viable, is that ultimately it's not up to me. I could write 100 issues of Joe, but if it's just me, then it's, you know, that's Pepos's prep project, and you know, the moment he's out, who cares? But so the fact that Erica, you know, is using Joe, it was amazing. I was so happy when Devin told me that was happening. And it's been all I can do to kind of keep that secret for.
That's been such a great series, too.
What's up?
That's been such a great series, too.
Yeah. So I think Erica has done a wonderful job writing Elektra. You know, I love that character, obviously, from my days in Savage Avengers. And so the fact that she's like playing with like two of my favorites, I couldn't be happier. It's sort of seeing your kids going off to school, in a way. And so, I cannot wait to read that book, and I'm very excited about it. I'm excited that I finally can talk about that, and I can't wait to see where Erica's taking him.
My kids go to school with Elektra as well, and it's much more harrowing as a parent.
David, this is great stuff, of course. Anything else coming up or coming out that you want to plug?
Sure. The finale of my horror series at Mad Cave Studios, The Devil That Wears My Face, comes out May 8th, so the Wednesday after Space Ghost. And I'm very excited about that. You know, it's Space Off meets The Exorcist. and we've got a really fun twist planned issue that nobody has guessed, nobody has seen coming. But I think it really turns the whole story on its head, and it is, I think, personal to me in ways that you might surmise after the thing comes out. And then, you can pre-order the trade paperback for our Punisher miniseries, Punisher, The Bullet That Follows. You can pre-order it through your local comic shop, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any comic purveyor of your choice.
Awesome. David, so great seeing you. Congratulations on the success. Excited to read the rest of the series.
I can't wait to see you.
Awesome.
That's so nice. See you, David.
Thank you.
All right, there we go.
Let's go
to propose. And the book is Space Ghost. Out May 1st from Dynamite. It's awesome. Without getting into spoilers, super fun. Definitely check it out.
Very fun.
Justin, you lose power over there?
The power of the sun in some ways, as it says.
Yeah. You got to go to Australia. They're like, it's the next day.
It's already
previous day or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know.
They stole my life.
Just getting started.
It's like that moon. Just like the moon stole my sun. If you steal my sunshine. By Len, is what I sang just now.
We're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question.
Woohoo!
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook or YouTube or Twitch or X/Twitter. But what you guys drinking tonight while we wait for questions?
Great question.
Thank you.
Who's that? Oh, it's Landshark.
Oh, of course. Wow, I like that you put on a little play.
Do you actually have any comic book boxes back there, or is it just all Landshark with a front?
Hey, how dare you insult my comic boxes? That's all legit comics. And behind that is all beer. No way, man.
He's lying.
No way.
He's lying. We know it's all Landshark. I'm drinking a little Bel Air sour.
Ooh, fancy.
I'm the sour prince of Bel Air.
Oh, okay. Boy.
Well, I'm having a little something, something.
Look at us. I almost bought that, Alex, and man, wouldn't that have been something. You and me.
A little something, something.
Yeah. Anyway, good beer. We got a couple of questions here already. This is, I wanted to go back to this one. I thought this one was interesting from Naked Balige over on Twitch. Hello, sorry for bothering you. I want to offer promotion of your channel, viewers, followers, views, chatbots, etc. The price
this isn't
is lower
a question,
than...
Alex. You're
Alex, what are you doing?
Let me just
what are you
this
doing?
Up.
This what
is
are
a
you
question
doing?
From a viewer on Why Twitch. Pete's Why? Been very high on Twitch. You love Twitch. This
I love
Twitch.
Twitch. What's up?
The price is lower than any competitor. The quality is guaranteed to be the best. Flexible and convenient order management panel, chat panel. Everything is in your hands. A huge number of custom settings. Go to Streamrise. Thank you. Actually, I guess that was more of a statement now that I think about it.
Yeah, that wasn't. Yeah. Also, you don't audience. Trust anybody with their naked is in their name.
There Wait for our new segment, Statements from Bots, which is real soon. It's the opposite audience question.
All right. Here's one I think is real. This is from The Big over on YouTube. X-Men the 97, Big. Remember it. They played Ace of Base's Happy Nation. The song and group have been linked to neo-Nazism. Do you think it was used by design in light of the mutant genocide?
Whoa.
So, for anybody who doesn't know, I'll lay some facts out there. Yes.
I will say, this is the Ace of Base news that has come from this X-Men 97 episode. I had no idea about
Oh, really? Ace you didn't know about this?
No,
so, there's been a lot of back and forth about this over years at this point with Ace of Base, but the short version is, I believe it's Ulf Ekegaard, if I remember his name correctly. He's one of the founding members of Ace of Base. Was indeed in a neo-Nazi band when he was a kid, and they sung neo-Nazi songs before he was an Ace of Base. When people found out about it, he did, to his credit, profusely apologize, was like, this was wrong, I reject neo-Nazism, this is something that I did as a kid because I wanted to be in a band, and that was pretty much it. That said, there is a lot of things with Ace of Base. When you look at the lyrics, that it is hard to separate from the idea of neo-Nazism. I know this is going to sound crazy, but legitimately they had really good articles back in the day. Look up an article on Cracked where they go into this, where they break down tons of Ace of Base songs, including Happy Nation, which is like, wouldn't it be great if everybody was the same in this Happy Nation, and then we'd truly be ascendant on the earth as the race that rule? Like, those are not the lyrics, but like, that's the thing where you're like, I wish you hadn't pointed that out. So that's the backstory there. It's definitely
the idea
dogged.
Of going back and rereading Ace of Base lyrics. Yeah. Is truly,
I didn't
shocking.
Know Ace of Base had lyrics.
Yes. Well, they do. I think, based on what Bo DeMeo, who is the writer of the episode of the former showrunner of X-Men 97, has said, I don't think what The Big is saying here was the actual idea. His actual idea was like, he thought about the song. He, at least in part, based the episode on his experiences dancing and having a wonderful time at Pulse Nightclub, which pretty famously was the subject of a homophobic attack that left people dead and injured. So he was trying to use it as literally like Happy Nation. We're all living in a happy nation. This is Genosha. This is Rogue and Magneto dancing to it. There's a little bit of darkness to the music as well. So I think that presaged certain things. But even if he didn't mean it, I still kind of buy this, frankly, as an interpretation, because you have all the
Definitely
mutants dancing. Yeah. And at the same time, you have like, I mean, we don't know who it is yet on the show, but you have a anti-mutant coalition or group or person who is attacking and destroying people. So it works. You know, sometimes you do things as an artist and you don't know why you're doing them, or you don't know all the interpretation, but I do think this makes it richer in retrospect.
Agreed. Very much. And let me say, like, I've been looking forward to tomorrow's episode of X-Men 97. So it's like, it feels like it's X-Men 97 Eve a little bit. Right now. Because of just how great that last episode was.
Totally. Well, there was... Can I give... This isn't even a spoiler because, like, they put out the clip, but if anybody doesn't want to know about the clip, your headphones off, Pete. There you go. So, knowing the episode is Life Death Part 2, and we talked about this on the Marvel Vision podcast, but I was like, oh, they're going to pull away from this bad action, really drill in and focus on Forge and Storm, and that's going to be the entire episode to, like, give us a break from this, and then we'll come back to the main action. The clip they released is... The Shi'ar, the Imperial Guard, Vulcan, all in space. And I was like, what is this show? What is happening here?
First off, shouts to that. I applaud the ambition. The idea, though, that in our Slack, Patreon Slack, we were talking about, like, well, you think they're going to do the Moira McTaggart multiple live storyline? I was like, don't you dare lay on, don't even suggest more insane nonsense for them to chase. They're already doing it. They're already plumbing all the 90s and earlier comic book stuff to hit all of it.
When that clip came out today, though, I was like, I am done predicting literally anything that happens to the show because we have no idea. It's great. You can come back, Pete. You can put your headphones on.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Let's go to the next one.
It takes place in 1997. It's the past. So it's only spoiling the past.
It's not in Australia.
It's called history.
That's true. It's true.
It's 1996. In Australia, it's just called X-Men because that's the year it was done.
Yeah.
On the Game says, hey, any thoughts on Alex Garland's Civil War? I've seen it. Have you guys seen
it? I haven't. I'm excited.
Is it based on the comic books?
It is not. Reviews, I believe, are... I'm excited to hear what you think, Alex. Reviews have been mixed. I'm a little cautious now, but I definitely...
You talk about it on Week in Geek.
Well, we can talk about it here on this live show because we've been asked about it. The short version, for anybody who doesn't know, it takes place at an indeterminate point in the future when there is a civil war that is tearing up America. Texas and California are part of the Western forces that are marching on Washington. There is a president, played by Nick Offerman, who has taken a third term. The point is kind of not the politics, because they never get very explicit about that. You're following a bunch of journalists, including Kirsten Dunst and Wagner Moura and a couple of other folks, as they make their way from New York to the front lines in Washington, D.C. in order... Their goal is to interview the president before something happens to him or to the United States or whatever. So that's the whole point of the thing. I was mixed on it because I think the politics are very muddy. It's more like, you know, like that sort of thing. But in terms of the way that it's shot and acted, it's great. And you've probably heard this. And this was hyped up, so I was like, all right, prove it to me. But the one scene that Jesse Plemons is in might be the most terrifying thing that has happened in theaters in a very long time. Oh my God. It's honestly worth it seeing that for that alone, I think.
Just the glasses he's wearing in the trailer are like a bit of a crime.
It's terrifying. Like it's almost a problem with the movie because that's the level the entire movie should be at, is what Jesse Plemons is, the energy he's bringing there. And it just doesn't match that at any other point. But like, it's very well done. I'll also warn anybody, just in terms of, I don't even know if this is a trigger warning, but like the sound mix, they've really turned it up with the gunshots. So they're like jump scares. Like I jumped several times in the theater because they're so loud and shocking. So if you're averse to that in any way, definitely like wait for home, because I was like, ew, when it happened. So there you go. Stanley with a perennial question. I'll turn this one over to Justin. Any upcoming in-person shows or cons planned?
I have been working on this, and I'll tell you what, it's been hard. I'm surprised at the, but I do have a venue that I'm going to talk to you guys tonight about picking a date. So
Ooh!
News coming soon.
Yeah.
go. And in terms of cons, there is a con that I put in for. I don't know if it's confirmed, but once it's confirmed, we'll let everybody know. But that'll be later on this year at some point.
Oh, wow. So the answer is stay tuned.
But the live show in New York will be coming up in the next month, let's say.
Months.
Wow. All right. Michael Tillman says, following up on X-Men 87, after being wrecked after last week's X-Men 87, what do you three do to prepare me emotionally for tomorrow's episode?
Oh, my God.
What should we expect? A funeral? Extinction agenda? No more mutants?
Well, the name of the episode is Life Death Part 2, so... Mm-hmm.
I'm not emotionally ready, man. I'm not.
Can I throw out a theory at you guys?
You've already seen it.
No. I haven't. I haven't seen any of the further ones at all. Here's my theory. Wait, Pete, you want to take off your headphones here? Actually,
wow. What? Let's help. That's
earmuffs,
nice.
Pete. Earmuffs.
That's nice, Alex.
So, given the life death of it all, like, I think we are going to get the Forge Storm thing, and ultimately she's going to get her powers back. But I think half the episode, I think the twist there, given the Shi'ar clip, is we're also going to get Charles Xavier back. Like, that's the other part of the life death.
I agree. And I think Storm's coming back to life with her powers. Professor Xavier is actually coming back to life when they think he's dead. And I think it's sort of like, I wonder if it is like, I have to go back. I have to go back because of what's happened with from the results of last episode. So I think it is going to be like the hangover from the last episode, setting us up for the rest of the season.
Yeah. You can put your headphones back on, Pete. Schreikler says, what's a cross media property where you prefer the continuity of a medium other than the original?
Ooh, nice.
Shoik.
Like the Matrix ARG. Anybody prefer that?
Wow, sick. Sick ref. Bro.
What was it? The Animatrix? That was actually pretty good.
It was good. That's a good one.
I don't know that I preferred it, but...
Yeah, well, we can expand it slightly to say like where they really nailed it. And I'm going to throw out in that, because I don't know if I prefer it, but the Adventure Time comics that Ryan North did were fantastic. And a great extension of that animated show.
I think the fruit pies that we saw ads for in the comics were just so much better, you know, in real life than in
tastier,
yeah,
than eating the comic page.
Yeah, exactly.
You prefer actual pie to a picture of a pie. You're saying, wow,
controversial take from Pete.
What a real Yogi Bear take.
Hey man, you know, just top of the dome. You know, Schreikler asks those tough questions. You know what I mean?
Tough questions.
Well, there you go.
I like real pie.
The Animatrix, Adventure Time, and Hostess Fruit Pies.
And real pie.
Frederico Rosa says, was Pete happy they never got to the point of Genosha becoming Fuck Island? I assume this is in X-Men 97.
Yeah.
So you're happy they died?
I'd rather have people die than have to relive Fuck Island again.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say, the fact that we've put the term... Fuck Island into the universe so intensely is a shame. It's just a shame in our lives. It's just a black mark on our podcast.
You think that's the black mark?
The fact that you're just like, well, fuck Island, and we're all like, okay, Pete, okay.
We do have a serious follow-up here. What other comics, X-Men or not, era would you guys want adapted in an animation? So I'll bring up my concern with animation that I've aired a bunch of times here, basically from like the DC perspective, that they adapt these great storylines and then it just looks generic. Like you're adapting a Tim Sale book, it doesn't look anything like Tim Sale. You're adapting Frank Quitely book and it doesn't look like anything like Frank Quitely. So like, I don't need to see something adapted in animation unless you're giving it some sort of look. Like, I'd love to see an animated Concrete. That would be awesome. But I don't want to see it if it's like not either Pixar. Miyazaki or Paul Chadwick, you know, like one of those two things.
The thing is, when you're talking about like a Batman thing, they're going to make it like the animation because they want to bring along the viewers of the animated stuff. So like, I think a standalone property that's never been adapted, you'll get a specific take on it. They won't try to do your classic Batman.
But I want to see Mouse Guard animated. That's what I want to see. Mm.
Well, they had that. Like, they were working on that, and they scrapped it. You know that, right, Pete?
Well, you really fucking held my dreams up and then fucking crushed them to the ground there.
No,
you're like, oh, it's happening, and it's over. It was like, ah!
Yeah. Well, isn't that better than going on a real long roller coaster ride? Or was it fun?
There's
it was like a jump scare.
Art online they released.
You should check it out, Pete. Yeah, keep your hopes low.
Okay.
In general.
It's fun to listen to you type, Alex, just so you know.
I want to develop Alex demo typing footage into an animated series.
Wow.
Just send Pete a link later. We
could
do a
Wait,
whole
should we play this? We could play it on the show.
No.
There's 9 minutes of test footage from...
Oh, shit.
That's something Pete can watch in his own time and be sad about.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I mean, let's get a Bone animated series.
Yeah.
I'm ready for that. That's it's something about that was time. Surely in development.
How can there be no Bone animated series after all these years? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. This is it's like osteoporosis.
It's like, where's Why the Last Man? You know what I mean? Where's my bone? Well, they
did make Why the Last Man. We actually did a podcast about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
There
we
go.
Ooh. Are we going to watch this?
Yeah, it's only 9 minutes long. It's fine. Oh, we have time.
We're not doing
anything. I like that they give you the DRT. This is really
great. We're doing
a live show.
This is good
so far.
Show.
This is just a text
The first
page.
Couple of seconds are really what's...
Alex, put it away and let's get back to business.
Let's get down to business. Anyway, you can watch this on your own time, Pete.
Okay, great.
Justin was right. Let's see. What else have we got here? That was it. Stray Bean says, isn't the MCU better than the comics considering characters have had endings? This is a nice contentious thing to end on here.
Yeah.
Hey, Stray Beans, what's up?
Nice.
I'm going to say no.
Well, I mean, first off, I don't think the characters have endings per se. I mean, we saw Endgame, but mm-hmm. there's a pretty strong chance we're going to see some of those characters again in the near future.
No way, man.
No, I think they're going to open up the old wallet to get some of those folks back in. Because I think movies, especially the MCU way of making movies, are the comics model top to bottom. Like, they want to keep it going, make it as returnable as possible, just like comics.
Yeah. All right, we got one actual last one here. Justin's facial hair is serving Mirror Universe Spock.
I like the question mark at the end there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I agree.
There we go. Great answer. Why don't we move on with our next
section? Wait, I got some follow-up here. Justin, are you just growing out certain areas of the goatee? Is it just kind of like... Like, you wake up and you're like, you know, just the chin part today is what I want to grow.
I have a real laissez-faire attitude when it comes to my facial hair. I let it be itself. And this is what I'm getting. This is what I'm being served by my genetics.
But it looks like you're trimming some parts of it and then other parts not so much.
Sir, I am not.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you for your
There's
candor.
More hair here. I'll trim it all.
Okay.
I'll trim it
all. Well... That was some great trivia about Justin's beard. Now we're going to turn it to comic book trivia with Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online because if you'd had $25, you'd go to the comic book shop. We just need a brave volunteer for the trivia, and then you'll win $25 eventually. It takes a while for you to get the gift card, so don't email us a lot, but eventually you'll get the gift card.
Stray Beans.
Stray Beans, got it. His
Let's
beans
go,
may be
Stray Beans.
But he's ready to go.
All right, here we go, Stray Beans. Today's trivia is on comic book writers and artists, and a small nod to the legend, Joe Flaherty, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one, Stray Beans. This Eisner-winning artist went to Harvard and used to be an assistant editor at DC. Who is it? Is it A, Cliff Chiang? B, Oh, cool. What's your DJ name? See Valerie Trap.
Stray Bean says one is A, two is B, three is A, and the movie is Rat Race. Is that correct?
Wow.
Nope. Stray Beans really jumped the gun on that one.
I love the Stray Beans move there, but we all know that they're all A's. Let me shout out this, Pete, before you move on.
Sure.
What if you we've celebrated a lot of RIPs, deaths. Right. What if each week you honored a newborn? A newborn, like
a new life.
A new life.
Okay. Well, you know what, Justin? I like where your head's at, and maybe I'll look into that. I like
Here's
where
you're what you do. You go to the newborn board. You right. slip them
just
a train.
Hang out.
You're like,
just
give
hang
me some
out.
Info on this baby. It's
tell
for
me about
trivia.
The new kid.
And yeah, yeah, like,
tell me about the
no
new
problem.
Kid. Okay. Here we go. Question number two. This award-winning writer was born in Australia. Like our guest we just had, and wrote X-23, All New Wolverine, and many others. Is it A, Tom Taylor?
It is.
B, what's a name that's a great command? C, Philip Beer.
We've gone so far on this trivia. This is what a tangled web.
Where are we going to be in 10 years, huh?
Yeah, it's going to get weird, man. It's going to get real weird.
People are going to be like, there's going to be a cult deciphering trivia for clues about the afterlife.
Well, you know, there's always clues to
Ooh,
be
Stray
had.
Beans is from Aussie, is what I wanted to say. Australia.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Aussie.
All right. Great. Here we go.
Aussie,
question number three. Last one. This Italian award-winning artist is known for Miles Morales and Runaways, to name a few. Is it A, Sarah Pacelli? B, tell Bill to stop taking all the free tasters? C, William Samples?
You made that, when you read that, Peter, sure. It sounded like someone won an Italian award? Like
yeah.
Do they call it Oz because it's Australia?
Australia?
When you shorten it up, it's Aussie.
Yeah.
Aussie.
Huh. Well, never realized that. Did he answer? Let's just give it to him. Congratulations. You got it, Stray Beans. Shoot us an email and we will get you your gift card. Pete, what is the secret movie?
Of course, we're talking about the 1996 classic Happy Gilmore.
Oh, wow. I feel like Happy Gilmore has come up a shocking amount as the secret movie. Pete is clearly a fan. Michael Tillman has an important comment. Hey, Pete, when are we going to do Gambit RIP? How dare you? I guess you're not respecting.
Oh, man, that was tough, man.
Yeah, Pete, how are you doing with the news? They're doing a Happy Gilmore 2.
Oh, very excited. Shooter Stool.
Surely, like all great comedy sequels, it will surely nail the comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And not be
honestly, I'm just crossing my fingers for you that somebody from the Happy Gilmore 2 cast dies, you know, so that you could really roll out some trivia.
Oh, man.
It'll be great.
That's
if
when
time
I'll really
death,
roll out some trivia.
Time the death with the release of the movie so Pete has a news peg to talk about to add to the trivia.
That'd be really cool. As we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
What we're talking about, what's coming out tomorrow, or unless you're in Australia, Thursday. Man, there's a lot of great comics that I can't wait to fight/talk to you guys about. Batman Offworld number 4, Nightwing number 113, Titans number 10, The Spectacular Spider-Man number 2, and Giant Size Hulk number 1!
There you go. Justin, what about you?
Pete, naming all the comics, I'm looking forward to Animal Pound number 3 by Tom King.
Oh, come on, dude.
Gross.
You've got a dark side in you. You've got a dark side that I don't trust at all.
The Animal Farm comic book take by Tom King, which I've been really enjoying. Really liking the sort of threading the needle between the book from the past and perhaps some present day politics. Very much looking forward to this third issue. And Pete named all of the other comics, I think. Did you say Nightwing number 113? Because also, look, Nightwing, the comic is just like cuddling up with a warm blanket.
That's so dependable and so great.
Thursday, if you're in Australia.
I think it's actually Tuesday or Wednesday in Australia because it comes out a day earlier.
No.
What?
Well, anyway, Alex, a couple
Alex,
of that.
I don't think you know how time works, bro. Time zones are a real
lost. I'm lost.
Come on, Cornell.
Couple of books that I'm looking forward to. I Heart Skull Crusher number two from Boom Studios.
Dude. Come on.
Just a great all ages book.
Come
it's
on.
Basically
dude.
Like Mad Max meets Dodgeball, and it's super fun. Having a great time with that one. Also, Hack/ Back to School by Zoe Thorogood. Yes. Last issue of that title. Absolutely crushing it. Can't wait for that. And one I wanted to give a shout out to, I think last week we got a question about Lost Ian books that are like Lost. The Displaced from Boom Studios by Ed Bryson and Elena Casa.
Great.
Ooh, look at you.
Love the mystery.
Totally redeemed yourself.
Thank you. It is about a town that disappears, the people who are left behind. It's weird. It's interesting. Keeps adding new crazy mythology every issue. So great, great stuff.
This book haunts me. I meant to say this as a pick, and I didn't say it. So thank you, Alex, for saying it. This book, every issue I read, it really sticks in my brain for days afterwards. So
yeah,
definitely a pick up.
Good stuff. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. David Popose for coming on to talk about Space Ghost. Don't forget to get it May 1st from Dynamite. Christoph Bogarsch, I'm so sorry. Under Kingdom, you can check out from Dark Horse right now. Or Rick and Morty Finals Week Brawl Her from Oni is out April 17th. Next week on the show, we got a big one. Zach Quaintance is going to be here to talk about the fantastic anthology Death of Comics Bookcase. And we're also going to have Brian Michael Bendis. Andre Lima Arujo is going to be here to talk about Matilde's Quest, the second volume of their All Ages series. Super fun. Very excited to have them back. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday, new episodes. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, we're recapping X-Men 97 right now, probably tomorrow, maybe sometime this week. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Take care of yourself out there.